Director for the Media Department. I'm going to be moderating this panel with Chris Tragenos, who's a web developer at Harvard and responsible for the back in September 1st, and you're sort of preparing for a bigger move. Harvard.edu is coming this year. It's a WordPress. We have Bill Denton here, who's from WeCode, which is a little bit of a different setup. You have a much smaller
title. Yes.
And your title is Web Technologist.
Yes.
Which is a great title, by the way. And you're going to talk a little bit about that. You are actually on the verge of launching your first.
Yes. This week we're moving all of, not all of them. There's a couple of books that we publish at EU to WordPress, and we're going to move the rest of those scholars over the top.
Right, and we have Sean Brown over here from MIT Sloan and Newt, which is also WordPress.
Yes, it is. We're running WordPress at EU for the last year for the Sloan Management Review, the first publication for this.
Very good. Now, I'm curious, because I don't know who's interested in this panel. Are you guys academics? Do you work in universities or colleges? Yeah, a lot of academics. Do you intend to use WordPress, or how many people here actually use WordPress at school? Okay. And is that like a wide scale deployment, or just blogging mainly, or are you using them for CMS at all?
Yes, we
are.
Yeah,
very cool. So, so interrupt at any time, raise hand, shout out, whatever. I mean, this is really kind of a hopefully a discussion more than a presentation. I kind of want to touch on some aspects of using WordPress that and academic world and how they kind of fit together. I mean, I think there's a set of interesting sort of cultural and organizational reasons why WordPress makes sense at universities or colleges. I also think there are a set of challenges in terms of sort of technical, interdepartmental. So these guys kind of have put it to the test in various ways, and I want them to share their stories. But if you have relevant kind of questions or experiences, we're totally interested in having those up here too. So first, I want to kind of ask each one of these guys why they sort of initially decided to use WordPress for their particular project, and maybe a little bit of history about the project. We can start with Chris.
Yeah, just before I start, can we have a couple shout-outs of what tools we have here? Norwich,
WCI,
State University of New York.
Okay.
Algonquin
College in Canada.
All right. Great. So we chose to go with WordPress. We're kind of making a decision. We have a bunch of sites on various CMSs right now. I started around in July. And the Gazette project was just kind of kicking off. We had a couple different teams involved. We had the Filament group in Boston involved with some of the design aspects of it, some of the specs. We had myself, another developer, Max, who's here. She's here at the conference. And this Lynn Chen. And basically, it was the three of us working on kind of getting building the mock-ups and putting them into the WordPress template. We chose to go with WordPress because we thought one of the biggest issues in some of the sites we have, not to hate on any group of people here, but we have some massive sites like science.harvard.edu, Google. The upgrading process was really hard. We didn't have any internal Google experts. What was happening is we were at the point where to go from 5 to 6, we had to change our whole schema, and our templating system. It just wasn't viable. So with the Gazette, we chose the Gazette really first because it was such a low traffic site. It was kind of like, we saw it as a win-win because it was already a static site, and we thought if we could go with that first, which is like the school's news, it's like the school's official newspaper, so if you have like at your university, like the student one, this is kind of like the school's speak.
And there's a print component as well, right?
There's a print component, and this was, us rebuilding the Harvard Gazette in WordPress was also our print strategy was we were going to, instead of having a weekly paper, we were going to reduce it to more of a tabloid style that's like a folding this way instead of normal, column paper, and then we went to having every other week instead of every week. So what we're doing now is the people that still want print newspapers, every other week they can get kind of more of the feature stories, whereas we're considering WordPress now as our paper of record. So anything,
and we go back to, and I'll actually talk about it later, how far back, but even the older incarnations of the Gazette will go back all the way to 1999, so you can still access those when you can. I'll talk about that later, but basically we chose to go with WordPress because our writers, our communications people, are used to a workflow, and it fit really perfectly into what their business logic was anyways. And, you know, everything from a lot of people, oh, we don't want a CMS because we don't want to deal with not having a dev and staging. We were able to figure that out. I think a lot of the sysadmins got nervous about, you know, how security, different factors, and being able to kind of show them the interface and show them how we can manage who's uploading stuff. That's the biggest concern, is they don't want stuff like typo to go up on the site, different things like that. And WordPress, based on the different roles, editor, writer, administrator, allows us to kind of have that level of control to take worry away from, you know, some of the communications directors.
I think we're going to get more into sort of workflow in a bit.
No.
It's just that this is something that you see often. It's sort of a question of, do you mold your workflow to work with a given application, or do you change the application to fit within your workflow? It's a question, I think, that everyone here is probably Bill, why don't you talk a little about where you are?
Sure. I'm from Wheaton College, which is down in Norton, Mass. And it's a small school, about 1,500 students. That's a big difference in the school. Yeah, small school, you guys. We've been using CMS based on Frontier. If you've heard of Frontier, I can give you a prize. Based on Frontier for about 10 years. And about 3 years ago, the web group was formed. And prior to that, it's been people, you know, working out of IT, basically in their spare time. The college created a web group, and there are three of us in the web group. I'm a member, and there are two others. And, you know, at the time in 2006, we said, well, we need to do two things. We need to replace our CMS, and we need to do a redesign of the website. Everybody's been there, right? We weren't sure which one to tackle first, and we decided to tackle the CMS first. This was back in 2006, and it was before I even started there, before the web group was formed. They had sort of laid out the rules for what the CMS would be. And one of them was, we're not going to do open source. We just, the college thought they didn't have enough staff to support it. So, you know, this is when I arrived, and I have been using open source stuff for a while elsewhere. And we started looking at commercial products, and we went down our road really far. Not the bad ones, but the CMS, but you edit things with a red dot. Have you ever heard of that? Anybody using that?
No.
Yeah, it's terrible. I'm glad to hear you say that. We went down really. We went down that road really far, and we got to a point where we said, this is just not going to work for us. We don't have the staff to do it, and, you know, we're the guts to do it, really. It seemed like it took a lot more work. So we kind of put the CMS on the back burner for a while. We thought that our current CMS based on Frontier would, you know, hold over for a while. And we got to work on the redesign. Actually, we did an interim redesign, a short-term redesign. Everyone's probably done that, where you just kind of refresh the look and feel of a certain level of reading. And then about a year and a half ago, we said, well, we really need to do a real redesign. We need to do a real CMS change. We hired a firm to help us with the redesign, White Whale. Some of you may have used them. They're out of California. And at the same time, we said, well, we're going to do a CMS. And we said, well, we don't want to do Red Dot. We don't want to do Red Dot. So it really came down to, in the end, two CMS, we liked WordPress, quite a bit, WordPress I mean, and the vendor for the redesign, they have their own CMS, and they were trying to sell us that. And we also found that at the same time that we were setting up all these sites in our old CMS, we were also setting up blogs for people. So we kind of said, well, why wouldn't you want your blog to be your site, and vice versa? And that sort of was untrue. I mean, it really, it made a lot of sense. And WordPress MU had come a long way. We realized we could host lots of sites with one installation, and it can tie into our LDAP and all the, you know, all the infrastructure on the back end. So that's really how we came down to WordPress MU. We worked with a vendor for the redesign, and they gave us templates. Basically, they were not themes. It was not a WordPress, you know, development project. It was basically just a design. And the first half, or one of the first half, was to kind of redo those themes as those templates as themes. And that was a pretty big challenge, actually. I wish we had gone back, you know, when they first started, and I was just a vendor, and said, you know what, really, we know we're going to do WordPress. Just, you know, hindsight 2020. So we are looking to launch, actually, this week, you know, maybe tomorrow night, if I can get out of here early enough and finish some stuff I have to do. But we're hoping to launch this week, and we're going to have the top level be in WordPress, and all the departments, or many of the departments, will still be in this older CMS. We've unified the look and feel, so the new site, you won't be able to tell unless you look at the source code that you're going from a WordPress site to a Frontier site. That's kind of a challenge as well. And then over the spring and the summer, like I said, we're going to convert the rest of the site to WordPress.
So we get to start somewhere. Now, Sean, in contrast to the Harvard Gazette, you run what is nearly a full process publication online. So I want to talk about that manager review.
Trust me, if we could make a profit, we would. We are in the publishing group as supportive as well as some other revenue sources. So unlike Harvard EDU or Wheaton with 15 people, MIT, big school, really decentralized though. So I work with about 8 or 9 people. When I started 18 months ago, we were very far down the road of going with an open source, a technology that was proprietary system built on open source technology. ASP versus solutions. And so this is about July. And we spent about a month and realized that the project was going down in flames. Poorly managed on the part of the service provider. We were going to have to pay anytime we came up with a new idea for a new layout. I don't know how many of you enjoy working in XSLT, but I don't. We would have to pay monthly service hosting fees and licensing fees. In this economy, that didn't look like something we could really plan for over a multi-year situation. So after about a month of consideration and about 2 weeks of emphasizing that we were considering WordPress, this custom publishing or personal publishing system, trying not to refer to it as a blogging platform, we pulled the trigger. Our rationale for switching to WordPress was I personally wanted something open source, MIT, we have a pretty long history with free software. Down the street. And we needed something that wouldn't blow our deadline. I'm the only person on the staff that does anything on the website. There's no technology support level below that. And we considered a couple of things, Drupal, Moodle type, because my boss used that at his last job, and WordPress. So we quickly got down to Moodle type and WordPress, and then I strong arm WordPress because it seems a little better than either one, even work. And it proved to be a very nimble, quick turnaround. We have articles that go back 30 years, we've been around for 50 years, so we have converted about 1,000 articles, pretty long pieces, not blog posts, 4,000 word things with charts and graphs and some equations, that kind of stuff. But largely it was a nimble product that we could deploy quickly, and that we wouldn't be locked in to a recurring financial payout. And we felt fairly confident that we could address the situation issues.
Sounds good. Now, I work at Boston University. We have a different setup. We're a pretty big school. We have, I oversee what is essentially a design department. Roughly 8 to 10 people that work on the presentation layer of sites. We also have an IT department. There's a rocky history. If some of you have been at larger institutions, it tends to get segmented and decentralized. I thought my case was bad until I talked to Chris. We've moved a long way. I mean, our IT department supports, manages, and provides training for our WordPress sites. And we have single WordPress sites in view that get millions and millions of visitors a year. So our mission site, for example, and our whole medical campus was a pilot for WordPress, which was probably a really dumb idea, but
Sager Slim is out there, and actually our sort of chief developer in the back there, Gregory, I gotta look at him, kids I buy, just every look. But he was working in IT when we started sort of migrating basically offering WordPress as a content management option for people who were generally using Contribute or Dreamweaver. So we offer a campus-wide for anybody who wants to opt in, and we call that a migration, and my group generally handles big custom designs. So there's a big school with 800 pages, we'll read my the Dean of Students site, the Human Resources site. So we've basically been over the past couple of years rolling as much of our sort of Contribute-based web content and website into WordPress. And I think we're getting better at it, but you know, we've also encountered challenges. And I think the first thing I wanted to ask these guys to talk about briefly is the kind of organizational challenges they've faced, because they've been a big deal for us. And again, you guys can stop us and kind of chime in anytime you want, but this is going to be different, I think, for a small school like Phil's blog versus a big school like Chris's Harvard is known to be completely decentralized. MIT is known to be completely decentralized. And part of that is this kind of free-thinking culture that academia supports and endorses. And I think that results in these intertheoretical fractions. And, you know, IT has a big job, and sometimes communications people like Chris get the short end of it. So why don't you talk about that, Chris?
I'm fairly similar to Gregory. I was in another part of Harvard as a web developer and a communications group for the school program. So the same thing, kind of hanging out with journalists and photographers is a new experience for me. But yeah, I pretend like I know what they're talking about. I think decentralized. I think that sometimes being in a large decentralized school can be tough, but then sometimes you're also allowed to kind of try things too. You know, I mentioned briefly that we chose the Gazette because it was already very low traffic. So by rebuilding it as an online paper, which we had more daily updates, all these smaller groups at Harvard, all these smaller institutes, and things like maybe like an institute within the Kennedy School or a group, a think tank within the business school, can give us articles to post. Like, we kind of see it as we're a central kind of a clearinghouse for stories that you'd like it to reach the larger Harvard community, whether it's our Twitter account, whether it's our Gazette, where we publish stories and then they get sent across social media and stuff like that. So we feel like as being kind of the central communications for the school, we can by trying out this process on a site that wasn't of value before, that would obviously, long term, we want to get it. So by building it, showing that it works, people are buying into it, we want to tackle the big pieces, which is Harvard.edu. And that is this year's project, since the Gazette was a really big, we consider it a good success based on our metrics. And the honestly, switching to WordPress was like a very, for our department, was very helpful. We got worried with the same exact process and stuff. So yeah, I would say for us, being very decentralized, it helped in us being kind of the central group. We're a small group. I mean, there's public affairs communications in our group, digital communications. And there's about five of us. Got some multimedia producers, two developers, and then a sysadmin. We have a contract agency. So so far, that's what I'm gonna say.
Well, you know, we talked a lot about how your relationship with IT has been fraught with challenge. And I don't know if you can choose not to get into too much detail here, but I know that.
Oh, no, that's fine.
I know that this has been a major stumbling block for you in your deployment of WordPress and your future planning.
Well, yeah, and I guess I could segue that also into performance. So we have the majority of sites at Harvard, a lot of them, like, that were built from 02 to 05, were built in, like, active server pages or JSP. And a lot of the servers weren't capable. All right, this is what we found. We launched the Gazette site. Everything was looking great in dev. Everything was looking awesome. It was sitting on a Solaris box. And then when we went to cut over to production, it was having the hardest time doing read and write commands for the database. It was just hanging.
So you think 3 minutes is too long for a page to load?
Each page. Well, and this is, everyone writes this down. For any school, get your boss to buy an application called Heartbeat. It is a lifesaver. Heartbeat's probably
$10 to $12 a month, and it's like Google Analytics where you put this little snippet in your code. It lets you know what the page time is. It's Google Analytics second by second. So we can see where people are coming in instantly. It's like the fire hose of Google Metrics. Well, not Google, it's like that, but it's like on steroids. It's amazing. And what was happening is we were seeing, we cut the site over
to the shareholder.
I'm not a shareholder. We just, it has saved us a couple times. You know, we sent out an email, and the internal staff was causing the site to fail. So we're like, if the internal, if, you know, less than, you know, 30,000 people are causing this thing to fail, we're going to be cooked once we haven't even announced the site was live yet. So we're going back and forth, you know, as developers, it's all your code, it's your code. And we're like, no, we're looking at the load times, and it's basically, it was, long story short, it was trying to call up to this Solaris and Veritas file structure thing, and it was just hanging. You know, it wasn't returning. And it was happening because a lot of these web servers are used to write command, recommand, write command, but when you're doing them at the same time, it was crying. And so it was really tough. So we, our solution was we went to Media Temple, and then we went to Rackspace. So that was, that's how it worked out for us.
All right, so Chris has taken sort of his own communications group and become, in a way, a mini IT support group as well.
So now we, I would say one other thing that really has helped us out a lot is we have, we're paying for the WordPress VIP support. They have like a customer box, and that helps us out a lot. A lot of times, you know, sometimes it is our template, sometimes something we've edited. Well, the other thing I mentioned too, we use Beanstalk for Subversion, Post and Subversion. It helps us a lot to deploy from our dev, staging, and production environment. And they're able to look at it and go, oh, you know, maybe check this. And kind of getting a lot of these support staff that internally, that, you know, we approached the database group and they did not have a, they were only an Oracle shop. So things like that, you need support because as a developer, it's overwhelming when the site's not loading and you can't explain why because you're not a dev, you're not a sysadmin. And then if you go, it's just broken, screw it, you know, your thing doesn't work. And kind of, that was kind of the pain of going through and figuring out how, you know, what is exactly happening and eventually figure it out. But yeah, this falls under the
If you're in an IT department situation where all their users are from Solaris, which is really big enterprise, expensive technology, and you come in and you sell on WordPress, like SaaS, your tax runs it, and then you have like a MySQL problem, those are fit classes.
Yeah.
Unless they've been running it, because they're used, you know, well, we use Oracle because Oracle is the best, and it's great. MIT runs a lot of Oracle, runs a huge SAP installation too. But one of the challenges we had organizationally was it's not with my current job as a management review, but years, a few years back, is making sure that there's a service model in place at central IT departments to be able to effectively, so that they have skills in the technologies. About, you know, as short as 5-6 years ago at MIT, if you wanted to do anything other than static web publishing, you had to go out and buy your own server and place it in the data center and get a support contract. And they could do that. And at the time, the skill set there was you buy a Solaris server. So if you wanted to do a blog, you got to drop $10,000 for open source software just to get started. So we worked in my previous position, we worked with the IT department, and it, you know, it takes time because you have to create new services, bring in new skills, new people around organizationally. But now MIT has much lower cost capability to provide virtualized servers than event-based virtual servers, so that the other departments around campus that don't, where it's one of the edgy campus right over here for a reason. We have a lot of leeway, I think. So you know, part of our solution is just a Media Temple, $20 a month.
Yeah. And I'll even say, anecdotally, even in high school, I've done some pre-med course with WordPress, Media Center. So they all do their own.
Yep.
Bill, what about you? You have a very contrasting sales.
Yeah, I think that's a different story. You know, weakness very small. So our staff is small, the web group staff, the IT staff is small as well. And as a result of that, we all kind of get along. And we're centralized, meaning that if someone on campus wants a website, they pretty much have to come to us and play in our know, but if it's just a
there are two different things. You have the university ID number that you have the university ID numbers, which is unique, but the username, they get recycled.
Yep.
So
once Gregory Cornelius leaves the university,
yeah, my Thomas, you, yeah, my GCORNE username is
and they can just keep logging on your blog.
That was the question.
Yeah. That's something that's maybe not been fully addressed.
Yeah, we have situations like that. There's a question here.
So if you're using WordPress as a CMS, it means you're actually letting other people work on the website, do all the different authors, and those authors probably upload documents. And I know document management is a huge problem a lot of the schools I've worked with. How are you guys doing anything creative with document management? Because I know you can't tag documents in WordPress, and you really use it as a document management system.
We're saying one of the big benefits is
getting rid of SCP. Yeah, I think so. I mean, a real basic level, we offer SCP today, and that's going away. And our users are going to love what they do love it already. That they can just edit their content and upload a file, upload a photo right there. There's really no magic. So, you know, we're not doing anything super creative. The files yet. Like I said, we haven't
launched
yet, so it's a little hard, but I think it will be a problem how to manage all these files. And
it
will be
known
with
the next FTP. Our big client was this issue in our human resources department, which is so hundreds and hundreds of PDFs in a few pictures. And so to answer your question, they manage the documents in the media library, and we rely on them using markup to define what those documents are. So it's really about how they qualify those documents in the pages that they become meaningful to outside the machine.
I think too for us, every month we'll have the PDF version of our print markup. We have those accessible online. So what we get in WordPress is, you know, you have different post types, you have post stages. We made a new type called archive. Basically, it's a post that you upload your own. You upload your PDF, so that's tied to a certain year, and then you can that automatically then populates all the way back to the last 10 years or so. So we made a new WordPress type, and then every month you make April, and then you upload the PDF into that. So that helps.
Hi. Actually, kind of related to that, I'm John Hurth. I'm from a large gateway out of the district of Chicago. And we're looking to roll out WordPress for everything. And one thing that I wonder about you guys' opinion on is, as a technical person, how certain things fit into the framework of pages versus posts versus tags and categories. That kind of clear to me. As far as pulling it out to someone who's not familiar with blogging and stuff like that, do you find it more successful to stipulate this is how you tag, this is a post, this is a page, or do you kind of just say these are the tools, use them if you want?
You kind of control all your content. Yeah, I do. Even though we're an editorial driven product, it all comes through me, but I could perhaps answer it in terms of what I've learned as far as saying this is better as a post, this is better as a page. I've found that custom page templates have come in very handy for marrying pages with private posts to create some things like custom landing pages that pull from different content categories where you're getting into real custom code in the theme. One of the advantages for me of using pages are we also have a separate page tab for a thing called articles, which keeps it away from the normal posts. Is that if I publish a page, it doesn't immediately show up in our RSS feed that everybody has. So I have 8 pages set up to go live on Monday, and they're already published. But nobody knows about it. So that's a small thing. But
I just add on to that quickly. We've pages have come in really useful for, like, say, the different communication officers needed across the schools needed to collaborate on H1N1 related issues. We had the public site, we made a WordPress page, then it redirected from carve.eu/H1N1. So anyone could see that, and that's public information. We had this other page that was actually a password protected and hidden
kids, but were basically the different communication letters that were sent out, the other schools could work off those copies. And so they were just given that. And we found that was great because as a page, we were able, in the template we had, we were able just to remove that totally. But the thing that I didn't mention is the Gazette is our newspaper, but we can also tag it as a PR release, and it will go to our PR site, which is just news that part that we need. So if it's something school-wise or they hire a new professor or whatever, if we tag it also under the PR category, it will also deliver to that separate site, which is separate from the Gazette.
One thing that we did that I think was a mistake was we renamed posts news so that people instantly realized, oh, this is news, everything else is a page, especially for our content management system. Because we had our blogs, WordPress MU installation, separate from our website content management system. And I think that we've discovered that that was sort of narrow-minded of us. And once you push this thing out to a larger community, people need to think about it in many different ways than you've anticipated. We do have other content types, but I'll just add that we've recently realized we need the same kind of flexible taxonomy with pages. So Gregory's built this really robust sort of custom taxonomy ability with our pages. So that, for example, if we started this for our international program. If we have an international program that's an internship in Dublin with all these different tracks and focused areas, we want that to be indexed with all these different criteria. Oh, there's a summer version for undergraduates, for these students only. So we've created all these different taxonomy clusters, these categories with tags inside, so that we basically work with pages the same way we've historically worked with posts. And this is a new thing for us. And what happens is we have to build it into the theme. So each really custom soup to nuts theme we do, we have this ability to relate pages automatically to a post that might be related. Or likewise, you can do the same. You know that your page is this type of page, the London page, the London video. I can relate that to the London program page or the London landing page. So again, just the power of content management systems over static sites for us has sort of been that we can associate all this different information in different ways without making people do a lot of work from an administrative standpoint. Question?
I was wondering if any of you are either using or have thought about using some of the social media features, especially BuddyPress.
We have BuddyPress installed at the UR.
Yeah. Yeah, we do have a BuddyPress installation. I mean, essentially at EU there are two separate uses of WordPress MU. We have the WordPress as a CMS, which has a huge number of customizations done, including reordering of menus, and a really robust page ordering, navigation management mechanism, and a number of different features. But then there's also the blog.muw, which is intended primarily for students and staff that want to publish without any sort of attribution directly to the university. It has a little more of a free form feel to it. And that is actually a WordPress installation. But I'm not sure that the students really use it as such.
It's not really well used. It's kind of, what the heck is this? We don't really know where it's going. What about you guys in social media?
Yeah, we don't use BuddyPress.
We don't use BuddyPress, sorry. We run down the pipe where we have a project coming up soon that will be integrating it with Facebook Connect. And it's public service related. It hasn't launched yet. I'll post something when it does. But, if they're in the Harvard network, they have Harvard, they can be part of it. We have plugins for people to share. We use AdBits, the AdBits plugin for if they want to share and stumble upon Facebook, Twitter, everything like that. But internally, we don't have BuddyPress or anything.
I've seen some really creative uses of BuddyPress. I think it's great. For us, we decided small, incremental build-out of our social media presence. Building a social media community for business practice management practitioners, we just go where the people are. So Facebook and Twitter, and we're building our presence there. But there are a lot of very creative and potentially awesome things for BuddyPress to fit in that kind of environment.
Yeah, we're looking at BuddyPress for down the road a little bit. After we've converted all these sites to WordPress, we'll do BuddyPress for people, basically. We know people walk along.
Do you guys do any calendaring to WordPress?
Yeah.
Well, a different WordPress project that works with just gives some dates with them, but doing it by, say, it's read-only. I have a colleague of mine who does a WordPress site for probably a university or a school, and that's one of their biggest frustrations. If you have an event, how can people sign up for it? How do you limit the number of spots? They link down to a Google Calendar. At least they have a calendar, but you can't have people sign up. So if anybody knows of any great plugins or anything like that,
that's kind of my. I did a project for a K-8 school in the North Shore, and they were paying a calendar whiz. We moved on to Google, and then we had to actually use custom fields to embed the calendar in the thing. And because we lost the iframe, we really couldn't have it maximized. But one of our things was we wanted to put on BuddyPress. So like, I want to see all the kids up there.
Yeah.
And everything, but the principal put the kibosh on that one. But that is sort of like the big thing. Like, if I'm a good developer, I'm trying to tell my buddy, like, let's do a really good calendar feature. To
I think Google Wave does
that. Oh, Wave does.
The vision side, we had to build a visit up section, which has the visit up section offers RSVPing and, planning your visit. You can sign up for various things, and the RSVP form is perpetually editable, so you have a link, you can go back and change your itinerary. So there's this whole planning piece that integrates with Google Maps because they go out to events. So we built this really crazy and visit us, we'll visit you system for the admissions group, but we realized that was a lot of effort to build something that was not portable to any other department because it was so customized to their workflow and their needs.
I would say real quick, calendaring's definitely been a sore spot for us because we went from a print publication to All in Web, and we had some older alumni very upset because we literally had 20 pages of events. And then we went to, we're using a third-party app called Trumba Calendar. It's been good. It really you can be exported to iCal. It can be, there's a lot of different options for it. It's very customizable. You put basically, you do the editing on their site as a publisher, as an account. You log into their site and you're able to have the import over. But it's tough. A lot of people want print, and we kind of, there's been a tough learning curve, and we're still kind of balancing that. The thing I didn't mention, when we have an every other print version on the off week, we're using MailChimp as kind of an old e-newsletter where we're just bringing up feature stories and the top 20 events that people have that have helped alleviate some of the calendar and load. We use Trumba for it.
And that doesn't interface to WordPress.
It's not just put in part.
Is anybody using Eventbrite?
Yeah, I was going to say, one of the things I wanted to try to get the school to do, or I'm trying to work with towards, is using Eventbrite for sign up to chaperone field trips and whatever. I mean, that's like grammar school, but I think it might have some applications, on the higher end, and you could also just sort of, expand it out, because it is portable.
Out of the box, WordPress allows you to find one author to a page. So if you have multiple people editing a page, I do a lot of that without making them editors, between making them edit any page of the entire site.
That's actually the only reason why we went to MU, aside from having a very rushed timeline which makes decisions. We were going to have freelancers. We have bylines because our authors really are not writing the stuff and get edited. So we have enough fields for the bylines. But we were going to have freelancers logging and stuff. Made them an editor for this one blog, and I don't even really know this freelancer very well. How do I, prevent them from going somewhere else? So that gets to the workflow kind of process. We did the traditional thing, which is you look at what you think your process is or should be, and then you look at the technology, and you go, oh, right, well, then we should go with MU because we can do different things. We have a separate blog for freelancer. We'll make it all look the same, so it looks like one site, so we can put the blog. And Freelancer B will have another one over there. We're just one publication, so that introduced a lot of probably unnecessary computation, managing teams across and different sort of things there. And as it turns out, I do 99% of the behind-the-scenes WordPress adding content anyway. So that was an area where we could have said, this is what our process and workflow could look like, but we could also say to the freelancer, if you edit anything other than what we told you you should edit, you're fired. And we would have saved that fair amount of money and time and development. And that worked out pretty good.
This is a problem for our schools, too. I mean, we limit people to their blog, but there are certain really gigantic portions of our university that this is a deal breaker for them. So it's on the table now, figuring out how do we limit people not only to a certain page or directory based on their privileges, but also some people will have to go through an approval process before anything actually gets published. And this is something that people who are used to contribute in a contributor-based workflow have grown quite used to and comfortable with, and WordPress is too risky for them.
Just a quick thing. In that case you had where you're basically permissive and then if you step outside of where you're supposed to be, you get in. If I'm remembering right, you could do a pretty simple database scan. You could do a database scan to find out where people are editing and just and create an app that just sort of scans the database looking for if they stepped outside of their profile.
Oh, sure. I mean, we're talking about a level of volume. Remember,
sure.
MIT,
yeah.
But I'm just a tiny little office.
Yeah.
There were like 8 people that worked.
Oh, right. Yeah, but
the amount of content that's updated,
yeah.
I mean, I just have email alerts and everything too that goes up. And, but yeah, you could
be a bigger operation that doesn't need the workflow stuff that we're talking about, then it actually would be pretty straightforward to say, oh, by the way, we're watching.
Just create a RSS feed out of it and monitor that.
In our case, we're happy if someone from the department wants to edit their webpages.
So
it's not a problem that we have multiple people in the economics department study. But if there were, we would give them all access to the blog. And I mean, people are not coming in without us knowing about it. We have to add them. It's not an open
system. I know we're close on time. Do we have any other questions?
I had a question on the adoption of the process of blog. Seems like it might be a couple things that a lot of times it's great, but also it's great that the process of being true and terrible
information. I can give you a couple of success stories. But basically, I think they're self-selecting. People who want blah, blah, blah. So at MIT, two prominent examples would be Henry Jenkins, the comparative media studies program, and on the Sloan side would be Simon Johnson, who runs a blog. It's a multi-author blog called Baseline Scenario. And they love to write, and I don't know how they find the time. They tend to write posts that are 2,000 words.
Our Dean of Students is out there on Twitter, Facebook, everywhere. He's blogging, and we can't get his way out to do
anything.
I think it's time for us to.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you guys for.